Well, it's time to talk science now with the ABC Science editor, Jonathan Webb. Jonathan, I didn't even have a go this week. No, it's been too busy this morning. Let's just recap people on our brain teaser this morning. Which number comes last if I spell out all of the numbers from 1 to 1,000 and place them in alphabetical order? Enlighten me, Jonathan.
Well, we had a lot of guesses for this on the text line, Sally. The answer is not 222. There were a lot of people who thought that might be the answer. A clue comes from some other guesses, which were the number 2, which is actually, if you do the numbers from 1 to 100 in alphabetical order, 2 comes last because TWO comes after anything that starts with TWE, so 20 anything. So the clue there, if you then extend it all the way up to 1,000, is that it has to be something in the 200s, and in fact it is 202, not 220 anything, 202. So congratulations to John in Townsville, Neil in North Melbourne who texted in, and Deborah Pickett replied to the ABC Science tweet of the brain teaser. They were all along the right track, but quite a few incorrect guesses this morning, including some that were over 1,000, so they weren't paying attention to the question, and someone suggested 0, but they didn't pay attention either because we said 1 to 1,000.
Great. Jonathan, let's have a look at science this week. A major study by the German Space Agency has explored the impact of alternative aviation fuels on climate change. What have they come up with?
So what they've come up with is that these newer fuels, which use fewer sort of hydrocarbons, fewer petrochemicals, will make a difference potentially, but not in the way that you might think. Obviously, reducing carbon emissions is the primary way that we're going to minimise the impacts of climate change. But actually, evidence has been building for quite a few years that condensation trails, so the contrails, those long, skinny clouds left in the sky by aeroplanes, make a surprisingly big contribution to global warming. In fact, potentially more than the carbon dioxide emissions of aeroplanes, of aviation specifically. So this study was aimed at finding out exactly what sort of difference these different fuels might make, because they basically produce less soot, so they should produce less long-lasting contrails, because it's the tiny particles of soot that allow ice crystals to form and create those long clouds in the sky.
How'd they do it, Jonathan?
Well, it wasn't a trivial operation, Sally. So
they never are, Jonathan.
The German Space Agency has a test plane, which they use. They flew that around in big loops over Germany in sort of contrail-forming conditions. And then they were paid a visit by a NASA test plane. NASA has a DC-8. The German vehicle is an A320. And the DC-8 from NASA actually kind of crisscrossed through the wake, if you like, of the German plane, which was creating the contrails, and that plane had instruments sort of strapped to the wings or the fuselage on the nose to sample the contrail and measure how much soot was there, how many ice crystals were there, and what they found, sure enough, these blends of fuels, so fuels that had some petroleum-based fuel but had either synthetic fuel or biofuel added in, they created less soot and created not only fewer ice crystals but bigger ice crystals. And apparently that's actually better. So if you have bigger ice crystals forming, they'll evaporate faster, and if you do have a contrail forming, it won't last as long. So overall, it'll make less of a difference to global warming. The idea of the contrails warming the planet is much like clouds. They'll just trap the heat in. It won't radiate out into space. They also reflect a little of the sun's warmth back out into space, but overall it's a net increase in warming from clouds like that. So the idea is to try and minimise them.
That experimental flight would have looked a bit interesting on the flight tracker,
sure,
with these
would.
Two planes,
yeah,
going around. And just finally, some listeners may remember that the nearby star Betelgeuse was recently observed getting dramatically dimmer, aren't we all? Now a study in the journal Nature this week offers an explanation. Who or what turned out the light?
Well, it wasn't what people thought. So this was about 18 months ago. Betelgeuse got quite dramatically dimmer, and it's about the 10th brightest star in the sky, so you could see this with the naked eye. It went down to about 35% of its usual brightness. And lots of people thought that things might be about to get exciting, because Betelgeuse is a red supergiant, a huge star, which is gradually losing mass. And stars like that, sooner or later, lose a whole lot of mass, get too dense, and collapse on themselves and explode as a supernova. And at that point, you'd be able to see it in the daytime. That's a big event. The last one was several hundred years ago. But that hasn't happened. So astronomers have been looking at Betelgeuse and going, well, if you haven't exploded, what's going on up there? And this group, an international group of researchers, used the Very Large Telescope, which is, as it says, a very big and very powerful telescope, high in the dry, cold mountains of Chile in the Andes. They looked at a bunch of images over that time when it dimmed and modelled them in various ways. And what they've discovered is what they think caused the dimming was a cold spot. So a cold, darker spot on the in the sort of southern hemisphere, I think, of the star, which caused a bit of dimming. But then on top of that, that cooler spot actually caused a big cloud of gas, which had been emitted by the star. So a fart, if you like. I think the paper actually called it a veil, but other commentators have referred to it as a fart by the star. This gas outburst actually condensed into dust, so that obscured some of the light of the star. So it was a cold spot combined with a gaseous emission from Betelgeuse, which caused the dimming.
So is Betelgeuse going to be okay?
Well, not ultimately, Sally. So it hasn't exploded now or about 600 years ago because it's about 600 light years away, but it will do at some point. So in hundreds, maybe thousands of years, but maybe in a handful of years, it will go supernova, which will be a spectacular event, but it's just very hard to predict exactly when.
Betelgeuse has a lot of fans, though, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, well, it's very bright and it's a lovely kind of orangey colour. You can see it. It's in the constellation of Orion, and if you're in the northern hemisphere, and Orion's the right way up, it's sort of in his armpit, the top left, but in the southern hemisphere, Orion's upside down, and it's that the bit we often see as the saucepan in the sky. So it's sort of just below the saucepan and off to the right. That's where you see Betelgeuse. It's a lovely bright star that got a bit dimmer, but is now back to its more usual brightness.
Well, star farts. I've learned a lot this morning. Jonathan.
I'm here to help. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Jonathan Webb, the ABC Science Editor. And to read more about those stories and sign up for a weekly new science newsletter, you can have a look for the science section on the ABC News website.